This week, mass kidnappings on the rise amid the worst economic crisis Nigeria has seen in a generation. There's widespread anger over sky-high prices and stagnant wages. How did Africa's largest economy get here? Are President Bola Tinubu's radical reforms helping or hindering progress in the West African nation? We'll bring you in-depth reporting and analysis. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa. We're coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. It is so great to be with you. Nigeria is facing its worst economic crisis in years. Its currency has fallen to record lows. Inflation is soaring to record highs. Now, economies worldwide are under pressure, but critics say Nigeria's economic problems are being exacerbated by President Bola Tinubu's so-called shock therapy, radical reforms meant to transform the economy. But nearly a year on, many Nigerians are still struggling to navigate the sky-high costs of food and other essential services. Timothy Obiezu is in the capital, Abuja, for us with this report.
Haiti, Nigerian authorities have announced the distribution of 42,000 metric tons of free grains across the country to ease pressure and lower food prices. This after a pledge in late February to support millions of vulnerable households with cash grants. But these are not just random government interventions. They are the response to Nigeria's worst economic crisis in a generation. But how did this happen?
Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu ending the fuel subsidy payments during his inaugural speech last May. Tinubu said the measure was part of reforms to kickstart Nigeria's ailing economy. And soon afterward, the president also removed foreign currency controls to improve investor confidence. But instead of the anticipated results, costs of food and transport have gone beyond the reach of ordinary citizens.
Fuel is the problem we have. When that is addressed, the prices will come down. The dollar is not the problem in Nigeria. It is the fuel. To transport goods from the States to Abuja is not easy.
My brother, this man, I'm hungry. I don't even have 1 naira to buy. The most important thing, I'm trying to make sure that my children eat at least 2 times in a day. I'm not talking about me.
Fuel is the lifeline of Nigeria's economy. Homes, small businesses, big corporations all depend on it to get by. The president's predecessors had paid subsidies for decades to keep fuel affordable. But Nigerian authorities argued the scheme was used to steal public funds and said monies saved from the program would be used to better education, healthcare, and infrastructure. But analysts say the plan was not well thought out.
Starting from the way the reforms were rolled out, there were no deep think about how to critically organize it. We didn't think deep about what would be the pushback from the reform, what would be the fallout and outcome of the reform.
Nigeria's February inflation soared to its highest in 3 decades. The economic pressures led thousands to the streets in protests. The Nigerian Workers Union led one of the rallies and issued an ultimatum to the government to fix the problem or face a possible shutdown. In response, the government announced a cash transfer scheme for 12 million households to lessen the burden caused by reforms. Authorities also promised free grains to all the states.
I'm worried that we've turned our state into a country of palliative. That's not the solution. The solution is not about giving people handouts. The solution is about solving the root cause of the problem, getting people back to job, getting people back to work, getting people back to farm and so on.
Recently, angry citizens looted storehouses and food trucks in 4 Nigerian states. Analysts say the economic problems could become a recipe for insecurity.
Nigeria is a fragile state. All the indices of fragility, unfortunately, are increasing. And the economic challenges, the distress that the economy is currently under is an indication of that fragility of the state. And anyone who is not bothered by the fact that this is a push and a pull factor as well for insecurity does not seem to appreciate the danger that we're in.
Bola Tinubu inherited an economy that was already struggling with huge debts, high unemployment rate, and low productivity. In 2 months' time, the president will mark his first year in office. And despite the challenges, authorities say the reforms are well on track to spin Nigeria's economic fortunes. But millions of people may remember his first year anniversary by the hunger and pain they had to endure. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
That's Timothy Obiezu in Abuja, Nigeria, there for us with some great reporting. Now, Nigeria's security challenges are also in the spotlight. In a string of attacks in recent weeks, armed groups have kidnapped hundreds of people, primarily school children from across northern Nigeria. Criminal gangs known as bandits have abducted over 200 internally displaced people and around 300 children. Why do mass kidnappings appear to be on the rise again in Nigeria? Well, joining me here in studio to discuss this is VOA's Hausa News Service Chief, Aliyu Mustafa. Aliyu, always great to see you, and a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Haiti. How are you doing?
I am good, thank you. I'm so glad that you're in here to talk to us, you know, because I want to draw on your experience and your background covering these issues over many years. You know, Aliyu, we've been looking at the economic circumstances in the country, but also very troubling trends on the security front. Can you help us understand who and what is behind this latest spate of mass kidnappings we're seeing?
Here, you know, this kidnapping business started with Boko Haram back in 2014, right, when they seized those 276 girls from the Chibok school. And believe me, between 2014 to date, more than 1,500 students have been taken away from their schools in Nigeria. As a matter of fact, an agency that is in security estimated that just within the last 4 years, about 4,000 people have been taken away. Who is behind it? Well, Boko Haram started it, and as you know, Boko Haram is no longer in the news as much as it was in the past. But some people have learned a lesson from Boko Haram, and I tell you what they learned is that it is very easy to make a lot of money through kidnappings. So it is not one particular group of people. It is a whole bunch of people who, because of lack of things to do, people who are jobless, young people who are out of schools with no prospects whatsoever, who are finding it lucrative to now get or engage in this business of kidnapping. So it is not any one particular group. Previously, the Fulani people were fingered as being the group behind all these kidnappings. And that was an easy target because Fulanis had issues. They had been complaining for a very long time for marginalization. They've been abandoned. They've been ignored, according to all the complaints they have set out or put out there. So the Fulanis have truthfully been engaged in that, but now it's no longer just a Fulani business. It's just a business that a lot of people engage in because it is easy to walk into primary school and take a lot of kids away. Just probably since the Chibok thing, there have been cases where more than 300 people have been taken from at least four schools, in Katsina, in Zamfara, in Kaduna, and in other places. So it's not one person or one group of people, actually.
And this does bring me to the other question. I mean, this is proving to be quite a challenge for President Tinubu, relatively new administration, not even in power for a year. Yeah. Does this administration, and this is, as you say, this comes from an older problem. Right. Do they understand that there is a link between the economic issues in the country and then the security issues, that the one could feed into the other?
You know, Tinubu is from the southwestern part of Nigeria, Lagos. He's a Lagos guy. All of these kidnappings
the
is...
The godfather of Lagos.
Yeah, that's what they call him. Unfortunately, all of this kidnapping is taking place in northern Nigeria. Not in the south, not in the southeast, southwest, or anywhere else, but northern Nigeria. And even in northern Nigeria, it is specifically in two regions, northeast and northwest. It's more pronounced in the northwestern part of Nigeria, primarily in about six or five states, Kano, Katsina, Sokoto, Zamfara, and others. It's not happening in the rest of Nigeria. You wonder why. Well, I think a lot of people don't believe that people in other parts of Nigeria would tolerate this ease with which people can just walk into an environment, a school, and just take people away. Take the example of the latest situation in Kaduna, where 287 kids were taken out. This was in broad daylight at 8 a.m. in the morning, just after an assembly.
Reason.
These kids, 100 of them are 12 years or younger than 12 years. Some say some of them are even as young as 3 years old. How do we walk into a place and march out this number of kids in broad daylight? I mean, it will take you at least 20 minutes to be able to get them out of the area. And Kaduna is one of the most militarized locations in Nigeria, with military schools, Air Force, a lot of police formations. And yet nothing happened. So these bandits, these armed men, have realized that people by themselves are generally afraid to confront them, because the people are not armed. They are. So it is becoming easy. And they get a lot of money from it. The government continues to insist that it does not pay ransom. But people whose children are taken away are forced, are compelled to put money together. One national police chief estimated that in a three-year period, more than 15 billion naira, that's about $10 million, was paid as ransom. This is money that people, communities, organizations put together to pay these kids. Each and every time these kids are taken, ransom is paid. And apparently, Tinubu, back to the question you're asking, Tinubu came and found this issue. Even Buhari, who is from one of the affected states, Katsina, didn't or couldn't do much about it. So people are just, you know, left to their fate. The government doesn't seem to be doing anything. I also remember, Haiti, Nigeria, with over 200 million people, still has less than 400,000 policemen and women. How do you have 400,000 people secure 200 million people? I spoke to the Minister of Defense just last week, and this is the point he was making, that I cannot have a soldier in every 10 feet in Nigeria. True, he can't. But still, in a place that is already militarized, you would expect that there wouldn't be this much carnage of such nature taking place.
And often, you know, a police presence is required, because police are meant to be working with civilians, where soldiers are meant for warfare. But when it comes to issues of communities and policing, you would expect to have police.
You know,
there.
Some northern states are taking steps to secure themselves by establishing vigilante groups and arming them fully. I know for a fact that two states, Zamfara and Sokoto, have done that. And they are now talking about starting state police, allowing each of the 36 states in Nigeria to have its own police force. The problem with that is it could be abused, because political opponents might use it against one another. Right. And there's no guarantee that it is even going to work, really, because right. It hasn't worked. So they are now forming their own vigilante groups, and they are giving them trucks and guns and ammunition and things, hoping that this would kind of, you know, work towards resolving this problem. I don't know that it would.
Vigilantism almost guaranteed to happen. We saw the same thing in my hometown of Cape Town. Absence of policing, communities start vigilante groups, and it goes off the rails eventually.
Right.
But Aliyu Mustafa, will continue watching the story. Thank you for your time for coming in here to speak
Thank
to us.
Thank you for having me.
It is our pleasure. Aliyu Mustafa is the House and News Service Chief within VOA's Africa Division. So what can be done to address Nigeria's economic and security challenges? Have the president's policies made things better or worse? After the break, we'll look at what's troubling Africa's largest economy. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
It is said that firstborn daughters face pressures and often seen as the third parent to their younger siblings. On this week's episode of Our Voices, we hear testimonies as well as experts' take on how firstborn daughters handle the responsibilities of being a caretaker and a house helper in a family, even from a very young age. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. Mass kidnappings, sky-high inflation, and widespread anger over the high cost of living and stagnant wages. Is this the fallout from Nigerian President Bola Tinubu's so-called shock therapy? We're discussing the West African nation's economic and security challenges nearly 1 year after President Tinubu took office. My guest this week is Temi Ibirogba. She's a political analyst and an editor at the Africa Center. Temi, it's always great to see you. It's been a while, but a warm welcome back to Straight Talk Africa to you. Temi, help us understand a little bit more about Nigeria's economy. What exactly does make it Africa's largest economy in terms of what are the sectors? We know oil is obviously a big resource, but what are the other sectors driving the country's GDP?
Yeah, thank you for having me. So in terms of the sectors driving the country's GDP, you have services, you have industry, and you have agriculture. But oil actually contributes to two-thirds of the government's revenue. So when oil prices begin to fall, it actually affects everything. And oil prices have been greatly suffering since 2014. So this has been greatly affecting Nigeria's economy. Like you said, it's meant to be the giant of Africa, but it's not actually producing as much oil as an oil giant should be. And this is because of things like insecurity, so like oil theft and just general insecurity, like pipeline vandalism, attacks on oil facilities, things like that. But just in general, oil is not, you know, significantly improving the well-being of Nigerians. Non-oil sectors actually vastly more employ Nigerians, for example, services.
I want to bring into the conversation as well Amaka Anku. She is the practice head for the Eurasia Group here in Washington. Amaka, a warm welcome to you. And I want to start right out with you. We've been looking at the some of the security challenges, but by and large, the economic challenges we're seeing in Nigeria right now. As Temi was explaining, that there are various other sectors driving Nigeria's GDP, but the economy is not performing the way it should. Now the country seems to be in its worst shape in decades. Can you help us understand how did Africa's largest economy get here? And were there signs early on that this was bound to happen?
Yeah, so I just want to say thank you for having me first, but I want to reiterate something your other guest was saying, right? Which is a lot of people think about Nigeria as an oil economy. It's not. Oil has been contracting for over two decades. Oil is 6% of Nigeria's GDP, 6%, okay? The problem, though, is that oil provides over 90% of Nigeria's foreign exchange earnings. Now, Nigeria fundamentally relies a lot on imports. But because it doesn't have a lot of exports, it's not earning enough foreign exchange to afford all of the imports that it wants and it needs and it demands. And that is precisely fundamentally the problem here, is that the economy is just not that productive. It doesn't produce a lot of goods. to consume locally and to sell to the rest of the world to earn foreign exchange, right? And that's been a big reason for the current currency crisis, because there's a lot more demand for dollars than there is supply. And obviously that is also helping to push inflation, along with some of the other issues that you guys were already discussing. But fundamentally, it's not very productive as an economy.
Now, we of course know that economies around the world are struggling. I think COVID-19 and those aftershocks revealed a lot of shortcomings in many economies, especially in the global south or in the so-called developing world. When President Bola Tinubu came into office, of course, he came in with this big promise that he was going to make radical changes. Temi, what is your assessment of President Tinubu's so-called shock therapy that he promised would transform the country? Are we perhaps not giving him enough time, though, to do what he wants to do?
So, of course, in the long term, we'll be able to see things more, you know, we'll be able to see the long-term effects of his shock therapy on economic reforms, like you're calling them. But so far, the way he implemented it just wasn't done properly, and I think it was done poorly. He announced this oil subsidy on his first day in office, and it wasn't phased out. So that just created a shock, and is why inflation just increased so rapidly, and specifically things like food, things like fuel that Nigeria is importing. These are things that Nigerians need to survive, to live, and now they're incredibly, you know, expensive. The subsidy, of course, did make fuel cheaper for years for Nigerians, so the cost of that has gone up. In terms of how we've gotten here, yes, like you said, you know, Tinubu came into an already declining economy because of things like corruption, mismanagement, over-dependence on oil, lack of diversity within the economy, as well as the fact that we neglected agricultural, you know, outputs because people were cramming into major cities like Lagos. And we were just like an import-dependent country, like I said before. The value of the Naira also has fallen. So it costs so much more to import these basic goods. But in general, he could have just gone about it in a more phased out approach. But like you said, in the long term, we'll be able to see the effects more clearly. But at the moment, it's caused a huge strain on an already strained economy.
Amaka, what is your take and your assessment of the so-called shock therapy of President Tinubu?
So first, I don't know that he intended to go to do shock therapy, right? That's sort of what it's become. But I do want to say that basically 99% of Nigerians voted for removal of subsidy and liberalizing the exchange rates, which are the things that this government has done. And the reason I say that is because there were the three primary candidates in the election all promised to do that. Okay, so that's sort of important to remember. And I think that what's missing, so I think it's easy. A lot of people currently are saying that they could have gotten about it differently. And I think that's always the case with any government policy, right? Like you learn and in hindsight, things become a little bit clearer. I think what's missing, I think that today there is very clear direction from the central bank in terms of what it's solving for and what it's doing. If they're raising interest rates, they're trying to attract foreign portfolio investments, you know, basically capital flows to help boost the currency. What's missing, I think what's really missing now that would really help, I think, the domestic confidence is that there is no long-term broader vision in from the presidency or anybody in government about the overall economic plan, right? So there's clear direction on monetary policy. There's no clear direction on fiscal policy, i.e., this is what we're trying to solve for. We're trying to become a more productive economy. This is how we're going to get there. This is what it's going to take. So one last thing, for example, the fact that you have a much cheaper currency actually can encourage exports. But now you have to have a plan to boost your exports, to boost your production, because it's right now Nigeria's currency is the cheapest in the region, and it's making Nigeria's food exports the cheapest in the region. It's a part of what's driving food inflation, is that a lot of food is going across the border. And that really now should be accompanied by government saying, you know what, food exports are rising. Let's invest in growing food production massively so that there's more to feed Nigerians and to export and grow the economy. That's what we're missing currently, is bringing in that plan that would actually help take advantage of the current crisis and grow.
Timmy, there are also serious security challenges in Nigeria. We discussed a bit of that early on with the rise of in abductions, mass kidnappings, in fact. Do the security problems here feed into the economic challenges in terms of securing foreign direct investment? And does some of the economics drive the security challenges in the country? Can you explain to us that link?
Yeah, of course. So like you said, you know, these security challenges are going to, you know, decrease or de-influence, rather, international investors from wanting to, because it seems like it's an unstable environment for business. But in terms of the actual linkages between, like, the economic and security challenges in the country, so, for example, oil theft, which I think I mentioned earlier, of course, affects oil production. Insecurity also affects agriculture production. Incidents like farmer-herders conflict, which, of course, makes the production of resources that these people are cultivating, it lessens it. You also have kidnapping, which is done for economic gain through the ransoms that they're asking for and receiving. And then you have banditry, which is also done for economic gain due to the challenges in the country. So you can definitely see the linkage between the security issues and the economic issues that Nigeria faces.
I'm going to put my final question to Amaka here. Can you help us understand what the long-term political impact will be here for President Tinubu?
That's a tricky one. Look, I think that this is something that I'm sure the government is thinking about now and probably worrying about. You still have a few years. The next election is 2027. I think that the answer to your question will really depend on how the next year or two pans out. Right. I think, you know, it could go one of two ways. They can stabilize the Naira and start to grow in a couple years. And then he will be remembered as the president that did X, Y, Z. And of course, if that doesn't happen, if they don't stabilize the Naira and we don't start to see growth pick up in 2 years, then it will be a very difficult re-election for him in 2027.
Well, ladies, like you said, there's still a long way to go to the next election. So I will definitely have you on, both of you back. Wild horses cannot prevent us from inviting you back onto the show again. But thank you so much for joining me. I do appreciate it, Amaka and Temi. Thank you. And that is our show for this week. Thanks to you for always watching and to our affiliate stations carrying the show throughout the African continent. Thank you for always joining us on television, radio, and online. I'll see you next time. Goodbye.